Real quick, we have to take a break to acknowledge the sponsor of today's episode, which is Secret Nature. Secret Nature's ultra premium CBD gummies are crafted with real botanicals, nothing extra, and designed to fit right into your day with clean, purposeful functionality. So for me personally, I like to take one of their snoozer gummies in the evening to unwind and ensure that I get a good night's sleep. After a long day, especially when my brain is just still running a mile a minute and I can't seem to settle down, I'll take one to help me slow down, unplug, and actually get a good night's sleep. I personally don't drink alcohol because I just don't like the way it makes me feel the next day, but these gummies feel very clean, intentional, and it never leaves me groggy the next morning, just feeling balanced and rested. Secret Nature's gummies are organic and farm grown. They're never lab made. They're ultra premium CBD gummies made with real botanicals and nothing extra. You've got two purpose built options. There's Bliss for clear focus and productive flow if you want to take one during the day, and then you get Snoozers to help you relax and rest at the end of the day. Each gummy has consistent, measured CBD, so there's never any guessing, just clean, reliable functionality that fits naturally into your schedule. Get 30% off your first order at secretnature.com with the code MAMA. That's M-A-M-A. And just a heads up, their Black Friday sale is coming up, and they are going to be offering 25% off on orders of $75 or more, 35% off on orders of $125 or more, and then 40% off on orders of $150 or more between November 26th and the 30th. So don't forget to use my code MAMA when you check out. That's M-A-M-A at secretnature.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever find yourself playing the budgeting game? Well, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive, you can find options that fit your budget and potentially lower your bills. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Not available in all states.
Your gut affects everything, even your mood. So Ollie created two brand new products to take care of your insides. Ollie Big 10 Probiotic has 10 strains of probiotics, their most ever, to support a healthy gut microbiome, immune system, and stress response. And Ollie Super Good Superfoods delivers 15 superfoods in tasty gummy form. Find them at Ollie.com and exclusively at Walmart.
Ollie!
These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Your burger is served. And this is our finest Pepsi Zero Sugar. Its sweet profile perfectly balances the savory notes of your burger.
That is one perfect combination. Burgers deserve Pepsi.
Okay, so, presents.
Check.
Decorations.
Check.
Christmas clothes.
Yep, check.
The turkey. You forgot the turkey.
Dunn Stores has extended opening hours over the Christmas season, so you'll have plenty of time to get all those little jobs done. Opening times may vary. Check your Dunn Stores app or dunnstores.com for more info. Dunn Stores. Make Christmas for everyone.
Oh, all right, run it.
Welcome to Mama Mystery. These intros are a joke anymore.
I'm Kelly, and I'm dramatic, and I'm also your host.
Oh my God. Okay, so welcome to Mama Mystery. I'm Kelly. I am your host.
And I am her husband that she loves more than anything, her co-host, Austin Evans.
Got that right. All right. Are you ready for today?
You have been telling me I'm going to have a fit.
Yeah, you're going to be like, oh my God, by the time this is over.
Let's go. We have had some tamed ones, so it's time to dive into a crazy one.
Yes, I've been giving you some relatively tame ones. Dee Dee Blanchard and Gypsy Rose. That one was a little intense, but that was a Patreon exclusive, so if you want to listen to that, you got to go to that. But our last episode was a little tame. You said that. Yep. So this week I'm dishing out one that might give you some nightmares. We're going from one extreme to the other.
Let's hear it.
Okay. I want to begin by saying that every time I begin researching and writing these episodes, I always feel a little uneasy about detailing the lives and history of these killers, because I never want to give the impression that I think they deserve recognition for what they've done. I just think personally for me, the reason I'm interested in true crime and I've said this before, is to find out what makes people do the things that they do. It's something that I'll likely never be able to understand, but sometimes you can see a common theme or you can find an underlying issue. And I guess I just think it's interesting. But I just never want to, like, disregard or disrespect, like, the memories of the people who are victims in these stories. So I just want to make that really clear.
I think that for a new listener, mm-hmm. it's a really good thing for them to hear that and be reminded. Mm-hmm. And also that, like, if we laugh and stuff, like, yeah, we're still having fun, like, this is life, but we're not making fun of the case, obviously.
Never making fun of a victim.
Yeah. So I think that's good for a new listener to hear. So if you're a new listener, that's good. And if you're a frequent listener, then hopefully you know us well enough.
You already know this.
To not be like, you guys are jerks.
Yeah.
Because no, you're probably you not listening. Know us. And if you're a new listener and then you think you guys are jerks, then just don't listen. Yeah.
Then
see ya.
Okay, so this case, though, our killer is a bit of an anomaly because few things could have prepared his friends or family or any listeners of this story for the heinous things that he was about to do later in his life. This is the story of Israel Keyes.
Israel Keyes.
So, Israel Keyes was born in Cove, Utah on January 7th of 1978. His family was Mormon, although I don't think that they were consistently Mormon. I don't think they were, like, born and raised Mormon. I think from what I've understood and read, the mom kind of bounced around between religions. I don't think they ever really settled in just one. But he was the second oldest in a family of 10 children. When he was 3, the family moved to this, like, secluded wooded area outside of Colville, Washington. And by then, his parents converted the family to be fundamentalist Christians and bounced around between churches that Israel described as being Amish to then becoming more militant militia-type churches when he was a teenager. So one of these churches was called the Ark, and they apparently practiced white supremacist Christian identity ideology. And the Keyes family became close friends with their neighbors, the Kehoe family. And later on, two of the Kehoe sons would go on a killing rampage in the name of their Aryan Republican Army in 1996, killing a family of 3 in Arkansas. So this just kind of gives you an idea of the type of people they were around.
1996 in Arkansas?
Yeah, that's what the Kehoe sons, like the brothers, did later. So the Keyes family lived in extreme circumstances, from the type of church they worshipped to their home life. They lived without electricity. They homeschooled all the kids. Some kids even had to sleep in tents every once in a while. All the kids held jobs to earn money, but they were all under the table jobs, like working on farms, cutting firewood, doing things like that. Growing up, Israel was obsessed with guns. This is just one of your red flags. He said he would shoot at houses with BB guns and break into homes, starting fires in the woods. I mean, these are all huge red flags. Destructive tendencies without any regard or respect for other people's property is a red flag. So he would break into nearby cottages and homes and steal guns, and then he hid the guns in this secret spot in his house. But his parents eventually found his stash and made him apologize to the owners and return the guns. So later on as a teenager, he broke away from the church, completely abandoning his faith, which caused a huge rift between him and his father, although they still kept in touch. It just created tension. And then he became interested in Satanism and decided that he would plan a satanic ritual involving a young woman. He planned this all in his head without admitting this plot to anybody, and he started staking out places and people, just kind of waiting for his prey to present itself and come to him. And that's when he found himself along the Deschutes River in Colville, Washington, near a place that was popular for float trips. And one day, he stood on the beach watching tubers float by, and as this big group of tubers floated by, there was one girl left behind. She was the last tube in her group. So Israel walked out into the water, grabbed a hold of the girl, dragged her to a remote campground bathroom, tied her up with ropes, and raped her.
Oh my gosh.
His plan was to strangle her, but the girl, who he believed to be between the ages of 14 and 18 at the time, kept talking to him. She was terrified and kept telling him that she wouldn't tell anybody if he just let her go. Israel said she was pretty smart because it worked, and things never got really violent like they could have if she had been fighting him. He said he was too timid and not violent enough, so he let this girl go. This girl never reported the incident, so no charges were ever filed, and we don't even know who this victim was because she truly never came forward.
So how do you know the story?
Because he later admitted to it.
Wow.
So in 1996, a girl named Julie Harris went missing from the exact same area, and she was a double amputee whose prosthetic feet were found by the same Colville River a month after her disappearance. And Israel lived in the area at the time, but he hasn't officially been linked to her disappearance or murder. But you just have to wonder. And she's never been found, but it just seems kind of coincidental, right?
Right.
So when Israel was about 18 or 19, his family was living in Oregon, and that's when Israel decided to join the army. He was stationed for about 6 months in Egypt and made, he recalled making trips to Tel Aviv with his army friends to find and like rent prostitutes. And around this time, he decided he was an atheist and he became a big fan of the Insane Clown Posse. And this is not to dog anyone who's a fan of the Insane Clown Posse, but that band has always just kind of freaked me out. And I just, it just makes me nervous.
I don't know a lot about them, but I just know, like, they seem kind of satanic.
I don't know. I truly don't know. I know that they have come out and done some, like, charitable work. And so, you know, maybe they're trying to kind of, like, regain kind of a little bit of a better image so they're not just, like, all bad. But I don't know, man. That band just makes me nervous. Yeah. I don't know. But anyway.
ICP, brother.
And when he came home from his deployment, he was stationed at Fort Lewis near Seattle and met a woman who he ended up having a daughter with. And he lived with her and their daughter until they eventually broke up and he started dating someone else. At age 23, Israel was honorably discharged from the U.S. Army and he moved to Alaska, where he started a construction business working as a handyman, contractor, and construction worker. He lived with his girlfriend, who was a nurse practitioner, his young daughter, and two pugs. And they were seemingly normal. They enjoyed things like hiking, fishing, hunting, kayaking, camping, like all those Alaskan activities. But his urges to kill and destroy kept brewing, and he started making plans and rules for himself. Like, he wouldn't commit crimes too close to home. He wouldn't commit crimes twice in the same place. He would always make sure that his victims had nothing in common. They'd be different ages, chosen at complete random. He did, however, try to avoid any crimes that would result in a child being involved because it just made him think of his daughter. But it didn't matter if he was hurting someone else's daughter as long as she wasn't close in age to his own daughter. And he made sure to choose lightweight victims so they'd be easier to transport. And he also started building these, quote, murder kits that he would hide and bury in random wooded areas. And they would literally be these Home Depot buckets filled with weapons and tools.
No way.
And when he would get an urge to kill, he would go retrieve these kits. And the kits contained things like shovels, plastic bags, flashlights, money, weapons, ammunition, and bottles of Drano. And since he was caught, these kits have been found, Austin, in Alaska, Washington, Texas, Wyoming, Arizona, and New York.
No
so we're not just
way.
Talking about like random spots in Alaska. They're all over the country. He had big plans.
What the hell?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Think about that guy flying around, going to Home Depot, buying these kits.
Mm-hmm. And he always made sure to do things with cash. And he never left a digital trail. He would rent cars. He would pay for hotels with cash. Like, he planned things very meticulously so as not to get caught. Although eventually he did get caught. Otherwise, we wouldn't be telling this story. But, man, you know, I'll tell you exactly how it all happened. But he never did feel bad about anything, nor did he ever go into detail about what he did because he did them for himself and they were memories for him and only him. So we know that he robbed multiple banks, he set homes on fire, and he killed more than one person. He killed 4 people in Washington, at least one in New York, and another woman in New Jersey. And one of the first killings that he did admit to occurred in June of 2011. So Israel traveled a lot, and one of his trips, obviously he traveled a lot to like stash these murder kits, but one of his trips was to Essex, Vermont, where he'd buried a murder kit just a couple years prior. He randomly chose a house with an attached garage, and he broke through a window in the garage. He then entered the house and cut the phone lines before making his way to the master bedroom where he found...
The premeditated shit really creeps me out.
Yeah.
Like, to think, like, okay, not only am I going to break in this house and murder them, I'm going to break in this house and I'm going to cut the phone line so then I have time to do whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, creepy.
So he enters the master bedroom where he found Bill and Lorraine Currier. He woke them up. He led them to their car where he first let them put on slippers so they wouldn't cut their feet on the broken glass from the window. And then he put them in their car and drove them to an abandoned farmhouse. So he knew exactly where he was going and what he was doing.
To his murder kit.
Yeah. When he later discussed his crimes with investigators, he admitted to binding Lorraine in the house, bludgeoning her husband Bill in the basement. And when Bill said, "Where's my wife?" Israel shot him. He said Lorraine was feisty and tried to fight him, so he sexually assaulted her before he killed her. He then poured Drano on their bodies before packing them into garbage bags and hiding them. And to this day, their bodies have never been found.
Does the Drano, like, deteriorate the body? Or what does it do?
I'm guessing it does. I'm guessing it destroys evidence, probably deteriorates a lot of tissue.
Right.
I don't think it deteriorates bone, unless it's sitting on there for, a long period of time, but I don't know. He then took the murder kit and hid it in a new spot in Parrishville, New York. So his last known victim was Samantha Koenig. And this would be, in my opinion, his most heinous and disturbing crime. And thankfully, one that would get him caught. Keep in mind, we know that he did commit a lot of other crimes. We just don't know the details. Mm-hmm. We don't know the names. We just know that they happened.
Right. Probably a whole lot of other stuff happened.
Yeah. So prior to the event that would get him caught, Israel had been staking out locations and meticulously chose the location of his next crime. He ended up choosing the Common Grounds coffee shop because it was one of few businesses in its area that was open late. And it stood alone because it was one of those small little kiosk coffee shops with a drive-thru. So similar to like Scooter's coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So Samantha was 18. She was working at Common Grounds at the time. And if I didn't say this already, this happened in Anchorage, Alaska.
Okay.
But she was working at Coffee Grounds on February 1st. I meant to say Common Grounds. On February 1st, 2012, her boyfriend of about 9.5 months arrived to pick her up at the end of her shift. And when he got there, she was not there. Assuming that maybe she got a different ride home, he leaves. And when he gets home, he gets a text from Samantha's phone that says, quote, "I'm spending a couple days with my friends. Let my dad know." So this was super unusual, and he immediately told her dad about it. And the next morning, her dad calls police to report her missing. They go to the Common Grounds coffee shop to review the security camera footage, and what they find is gut-wrenching. And you can find this on YouTube. In the video, you see... there's like 4 different camera angles. There's 2 that are outside. One is like shown, you know, right as like on the entrance. The other is from the other side. And then there's 2 inside the coffee shop. So in the video, you can see a man walking through the parking lot, just slowly approaching the coffee shop. And then it's right before they're about to close. He comes up to the window and he orders an Americano. And you can't hear what's being said. You can only see the footage. So then you see Samantha making the drink. And when she returns to the window to hand him the drink, she appears to be really startled and literally takes a few steps back. She puts her hands up as if there's being a gun pointed at her. And you can tell she's super nervous. She immediately reaches over, turns off all the lights after obviously being directed to do so. And then you see someone who we now know to be Israel crawl through the window and into the coffee shop with Samantha.
Oh, man, that's creepy.
it's pitch dark, so you can kind of only see like their shadows, and there's a little bit of light that's coming in from the outside that is, you know, like allows you to kind of see what's going on, but it's really dark. Israel forces her to her knees and zip ties her hands together. Then he guides her out of the coffee shop and through the parking lot, and you can see them walking together through the parking lot until they're completely out of the view of the camera. What isn't caught on camera, though, is that Samantha made a run for it before Israel caught up to her, tackled her to the ground, and told her to cooperate if she wanted to live. They walk across the road and into a parking lot between an IHOP and a Dairy Queen where Israel's white truck was parked. Israel told investigators later that he told Samantha multiple times that he was just doing this for ransom money. It was all just for the money. Samantha told him that her family didn't have any money, but he assured her that the community would come together and get the money to him. He promised her that if she just cooperated, she would make it home safe.
God, can you imagine the fear
for that
girl?
I cannot. When he asked her for her cell phone, she said it was still at the coffee shop. So he actually drove all the way back to Common Grounds with Samantha bound up in the truck. He re-enters the coffee shop to retrieve the phone and leaves. He texted her boss, telling him that she had just had a bad day and would be leaving town for the weekend. And then he texted her boyfriend, too, that weird text. Then he took
What weird text?
The weird text about, like, I'm going with my friends to let my dad know. And then he took the battery out of her phone. Then he asked her where her debit card was. And she told him that she shared an account with her boyfriend, and her boyfriend had the debit card. So he takes her to her house, locks her in a storage shed in the freezing cold.
At her house.
No, this is at his house.
He takes her to his house.
Yes, there's like a, you know, there's his house, and then to the right, that's kind of in the driveway, there's a storage shed. It's just a tiny storage shed.
Right.
He puts her in there, turns on radio, like way up loud so that nobody can hear her scream, and then he leaves for Samantha's house to go get the debit card out of his truck. And while he was at Samantha's
to go get the debit card out of her boyfriend's truck?
Yes. So he goes to Samantha's house to get the debit card. Her boyfriend comes out, yells at him, and then runs right back inside to get help. And her boyfriend had no idea at the time that this was the guy involved with Samantha's disappearance. No idea. But when he came back out, Israel was already gone with the debit card. He just had no idea. Israel took the card to an ATM to test the PIN that Samantha gave him and see how much was in her checking account. He realized that it worked, and then he returned to the shed and raped Samantha.
Oh, my gosh.
So the next day, her dad, James, immediately pioneered a huge search for Samantha. People were donating thousands of dollars towards a reward. Volunteers were scouring the area, posting flyers, ribbons, pictures of Samantha. A few days into the search, new surveillance footage comes out from the night Samantha disappeared, and it's from a nearby business, and it shows Samantha and Israel walking to a white pickup truck. It's like a 1999-ish white pickup truck, and the truck driving away. But the thing is, thousands of trucks like this are registered in the area, so they get the FBI involved to help. The next morning, okay, so she's abducted on the 1st. The next morning is the 2nd, okay? Israel leaves with his family for New Orleans to go on a cruise to Mexico. They had this planned this whole time, and he knew it. The entire time they were gone, Samantha was in their shed, but Israel was the only one who knew about it. He returned.
How old was Israel?
So at this time, Israel is 34.
Gosh.
Yeah. So, they get back a couple weeks later on February 17th.
She's left in the shed the whole time.
The whole time.
Oh, my God. Radio probably blaring.
Right. I'm assuming. Yeah. Maybe. I don't know, actually.
I'm trying to, like, you know, picture yourself in that situation. God.
So, he starts preparing his next move. And Samantha's boyfriend gets a text from Samantha's phone that says, quote, Connor Park. Sign under pic of Albert, ain't she purdy? They race to Connor Park, and they find this bulletin board with a picture of a missing dog named Albert. And under that poster was a Ziploc bag. And the bag had a photocopy of a Polaroid of Samantha, and with it, a ransom note. The picture of Samantha was in black and white, and it was a little bit blurry because it's like a copy of a picture. I'm going to show you this picture. And next to Samantha's face is a hand holding a newspaper from 4 days earlier. And you can actually find this picture online. I'm going to put it on our Instagram page, mama.mystery.
It's just kind of got her face to the left of the newspaper, and the paper's being held, and it says Anchorage Daily News from 4 days prior. Gosh. And what's the ransom note say?
And in the note, he demanded $30,000 to be put into her checking account. And Samantha's dad studied the picture to make sure it was really her. And he agreed that, yes, it was Samantha, but that it was weird because her hair in the picture appeared to be in a braid. And Samantha never wore her hair in braids. But either way, they got a hold of their bank and started working out a way to get the money into Samantha's account so they could get her back. And the bank agreed to let the FBI know as soon as money was withdrawn and from where. So a few days go by, and finally there are three withdrawals from ATMs in Anchorage. And Israel is wearing a mask and a disguise each time that he goes to an ATM. And even though they got immediate notification of the withdrawals, the police were always too late to get there.
Yeah, they probably showed up there anywhere from 3 to 15 minutes.
Yeah. So then there's another withdrawal a few days later, but this time it's in Willcox, Arizona, which is close to the Mexico border in southeast Arizona. Then there's another withdrawal in Lordsburg, New Mexico. On March 10th, there's a withdrawal in Humboldt, Texas.
March 10th, and what was the day this all started?
February 1st. So it's a little over a month now.
And how? And when was the money start getting put in the bank account?
Right after February 17th.
So this is like...
So like he waited a few days before the first withdrawals in Anchorage, and then he starts driving.
And doing the withdrawals in chunks.
Yeah. Yeah, in chunks. He's taking out the daily limit. And then he's going to, you know, the first faraway place was in Willcox, Arizona. And then he's in Lordsburg, New Mexico. And then March 10th, there's a withdrawal in Humboldt, Texas. And then there's another one in Shepherd, Texas. And investigators are still unable to identify who is making the withdrawals, but they are able to see that the person is driving a white Ford Focus. And then finally, on March 13th, 2012, Texas Highway Patrol Corporal Brian Henry remembered seeing an APB on a white Ford Focus and noticed one while he was on duty.
APB.
All Points Bulletin. So it's just like a...
Okay.
Yeah, it's like an alert that they put out to...
Like an Amber Alert type deal.
Kind of, yeah, but it's like to police officers. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, be on the lookout for this vehicle. So he keeps an eye on it, and when the driver made a small traffic infraction, I heard it was for going like 3 miles over the speed limit. That's what I heard. I don't know. I can't find that in any article anywhere. But anyway, he pulls him over. So he asked the driver for his license, and can you imagine the adrenaline he felt when he saw an Alaskan license with the name Israel Keys? So they search the car, and they find Samantha's cell phone and her debit card. And just like that, Israel is arrested and extradited back to Alaska.
But she's not in the car.
She's not in the car.
So she's back in the shed.
I'll get there. So over the next several months, he gave investigators very few details about all the crimes that he committed. But the most heinous that we know of is the fact that Israel Keys killed Samantha the night he abducted her. After bringing her back to the shed, he sipped on a glass of wine while he told her what he was going to do to her. And when he finished raping her, he choked her to death, left her body in that freezing shed while he went on his cruise. And then when he got back from the cruise, he revisited the shed. He propped her up in a sitting position, put a bunch of makeup on her, fixed her hair in a braid, just like he did to his 10-year-old daughter, and sewed her eyelids open.
I was just going to say, how were her eyes open? What?
And took a picture for that ransom note.
No way.
Then he admitted to having sex with her dead body. That picture you just looked at, she's dead in that picture.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's effed.
Yeah. It still gives me chills just retelling it, because when I heard that for the first time, I literally said, no, like out loud in my car while I was listening to it. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. No way.
Gosh, it's like jaw-dropping, just crazy.
Yeah. So after posting the photo and ransom note in that park, he dismembered her body and dumped it in a frozen lake. And he meticulously chose the location because he made sure it was in the deepest part of the lake. It was like frozen on top, so there was a lot of people ice fishing, and they would set up these little shelters for their ice fishing. So he built himself like the same type of shelter so that he wouldn't stick out. And he even did some fishing. He later told investigators that he caught some fish that day while he was dumping her body, and then he took the fish home and ate them. Well, like the same day he's dumping her body in that same lake. So during the hours of interrogation, he was very reluctant to release details about all of his crimes because those memories were sacred to him and only him. He was a control freak who had a strong need to always be in control, which is obvious, even when he's being interrogated. He's very arrogant, he's flippant, and at times he comes off as bored while he's talking to detectives. He'll yawn, he makes jokes, he laughs even about some of his crimes. At one point he says, the information that I have still could come in handy, while he just chuckled to himself.
Oh my God.
And he taunts them saying, I can tell you the rest of everything that happened if I can get a cigar. And then he laughs to himself and to them. He also demanded an Americano, same drink that he ordered from Samantha that night.
Were they giving him this stuff?
Mm-hmm. And a peanut butter Snickers bar before he would start talking, which they did give him. So you could tell that he thought and strongly believed that he was the smartest person in the room. And Israel admits to investigators that he is a monster, because at one point he was like, you got your monster, and just smiles and laughs about it. And nobody knows who he truly is as a person. And he still has tons of information that he intended on keeping to himself. And he kind of plays this like cat and mouse game with investigators, making them think that he'll give them a little something only to pull back moments later. So he told them early on he would give them more if they could guarantee an execution date for himself, because he didn't plan on staying around much longer. And he was also concerned about the publicity of this whole case, because he didn't want this getting back to his daughter eventually. Which is ironic, how he can care about the well-being of his own daughter, but not Mr. Koenig's daughter.
Right.
He said, quote, I want my daughter to have a chance to grow up and not have all this hanging over her head, end quote. So he makes these deals with them that he'll give them info if they can promise him anonymity. But then it all comes out on the news, like literally the very next day, and he finds out. So he gets pissed and tells them, you know what, I'm changing the rules, and shuts it down. And the FBI realizes that they need to build back credibility with him so they can find out about his other victims, right, that they're not aware of. And he tells them, he gives them like little bits. They'll say, how many are there? And he'll be like, there's less than a dozen. But at this point, they're only aware of like three of them. And this goes on forever. Every single time they'd bring him in, they'd provide him with candy, coffee, cigars, whatever he wanted.
See, and how do you trust him, though?
Right. So,
gosh, it's infuriating.
Mm-hmm. He got to get out of his cell for the day to come meet with these guys. So he's like milking it and taking his precious time and giving them details investigators wanted.
I know this sounds evil. Mm-hmm. I wish it was the exact opposite. I wish rather than giving him what he wanted, they were torturing him to get the information.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too. Because if anything, he's like loving this control.
Right. And it's, I don't know, you're just giving the guy so much power.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like,
which is exactly what he wants.
Yeah, like how about you're going to get punched in the face and then you're going to give us the information. And then if you don't, it's going to happen again.
Yeah, we're going to pull off all of your fingernails and toenails one by one until you give us information.
Evil, but seriously.
But I mean, he's evil.
Right.
Punishment fits the crime.
Eye for an eye.
Exactly. So then at one point he says, I know you have an agenda and a deadline, but honestly, that's of no concern to me. Literally says that.
Yeah.
He admits to killing someone in 2001 and again a couple shortly after, but he won't say their names. Another victim, he says, he left in a way to look like it was an accidental death, and says that it worked because to this day they believed that it was an accident. But he won't say who that was either. So You have to realize, Austin, there are so many missing persons cases or cold case homicides that are unsolved that could possibly be committed by and linked to Israel Keyes. But we will never know exactly how many, who they were, where they were, nothing.
Any of the details. He'll just give enough to make it a tease.
Yeah, because then on December 2nd of 2012, in the ultimate act of control and cowardice, Israel was found on the floor of his jail cell in a pool of his own blood after he sliced his wrists with a razor blade.
Gosh, that's like the worst. It's like he just got out of everything.
Right, exactly. And in his cell, they found 11 drawings of skulls that he used his own blood to like draw these skulls. And it was believed to represent his 11 victims. There was also a drawing of a pentagram and a suicide note that just rambled on about the art of murder. And it was kind of like this poetic ode to murder, but it gave no real insight to any of his other crimes. But, you know, ultimately, the most terrifying aspect of this case, in my opinion, is that Israel Keyes came off as a totally normal guy.
Really?
He looked normal. He led a seemingly normal life. He had a daughter. His girlfriend was a nurse practitioner, so she's got to be pretty smart. And yet he lived a completely different second life that nobody knew about, not even his girlfriend. The people closest to him. It reminds me of BTK, who was this, like, Boy Scout leader, member of the church, dad, who turned out to be a sadistic serial killer too.
What in the world? That is super creepy. When you put those pieces together,
yeah,
and you think of it's like, oh, that could be my friend. That
yes. You never know just how close you come to people like this because they could easily be your freaking neighbor, but their facade is just so finely tuned. You know, he was tested, like he had his intelligence tested and he had like above average, but not like crazy high intelligence. But I mean, he was very calculating, very meticulous about his crimes. I mean, he had to be.
He was a manipulator.
Yeah. I mean, he had to be smart. He's not dumb. Although he did start, you know, getting dumb later on. Like, you know, he started making mistakes. But yeah. And then to just take the easy way out and just off yourself. Like, what a coward. What a coward. And he has the audacity to say that he's worried about how his family will react, his daughter, his mom. He's like, I don't want to give my mom a heart attack. Well, you should have thought about that before you started doing all this stuff.
Man, you...
Get a video game. Like, why don't you just take it out on Grand Theft Auto? Like,
but this is like one of the things, like, are you born like this or why did this happen? Mm-hmm. Are you born bad?
Yeah, are you born bad? I think he started showing signs at a really young age. He had this obsession with guns and destruction and then, yeah, switched over to... I mean, but he was also raised in this, you know, extremist church, if you can even call it that, that, you know, he was surrounded by a lot of people too. So it's kind of like, was he born bad or was he surrounded by bad people? Because the people he was surrounded by went on to do bad things also. However... His other family members, like out of 10 kids, he's the only one that did something like this. So, yeah, you have to wonder.
Gosh, this is definitely a nightmare case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
big creepy. Time nightmare. Israel Keyes. Well, that's it, folks. Folks.
You really pronounce the hard L in that.
I know, folks. Anyway, that's all,
Gee,
folks.
Many Christmas. Well, hopefully you freaks enjoyed that. Freaking weirdos.
And we'll be back with another case. And I don't know what it's going to be yet, but it'll be a good one. It'll be crazy.
Share it with your friends. Have a killer week. Killer week.
Whoa.
That was kind of, no pun intended.
Why'd you just say that?
Mama, mystery, out.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. You chose to hit play on this podcast today. Smart choice. Make another smart choice with AutoQuote Explorer to compare rates from multiple car insurance companies all at once. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance and Affiliates. Not available in all states and situations. Prices may vary on how you buy.